simply will not buy the world that the elders have given them. They see too much hypocrisy in it. They see too many things that are wrong with it. And I think that the elders are going to have to realize that they simply can no longer browbeat youth into following its established path.
Welcome back to Sunset Politics. I'm Story.
I'm Molly, and we are so excited to be recording for you all today. It's been a few weeks. I hope you've all been enjoying the summer and staying cool out there. Story, how about you tell us what you've been up to?
Yeah, I just got back to the United States from a summer in Jordan. The last episode we recorded, I was over there. It's been a while because I've been super busy with stuff I was doing there, but yeah, I'm back now. It was great. While I was there, I was doing an Arabic intensive program. So now I know a little bit of Arabic. It's a very hard language to learn, so I would not say I'm fluent, but yeah. And I was also doing some research on U.S. foreign aid to Jordan, which I'll probably be talking more about in the future, maybe on this podcast, maybe not. But yeah, I got some interesting stuff in the works on that front. I had a really good time over there, but it's not home. And I'm glad to be home, and I'm glad to be able to record with you again. What you been up to?
Yes. Honestly, not too much, just working and getting some stuff in order to go back to school. I think it's crazy that we're going to be sophomores in college already. It feels like time goes by too fast. But yeah, I'm super excited to talk about all of our topics today because we have some interesting ones that I've been really curious to learn more about. And I think some of them you know a lot more about than I do. So I'm excited to listen to you and see what you have to say about them.
Yeah. So you want to just get right into it with the Trump stuff?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
So I can't remember what the state of this was back when we last recorded, but Trump has now been indicted 4 times, once in New York, twice in federal court, and now once in Georgia. I think the classified documents when it came out the last time we recorded, right?
I believe that they had, yes.
Yeah, so whatever the case is, that's one of them. The other one is for January 6th in federal court, and the other one is for the effort to overturn the election in Georgia. So 4 cases, four chances to go to jail. yeah. So I can go over like the gist of the federal January 6th one, which is probably the most interesting one out of all of them. And it's basically like there are 3 main charges. One of them is like a conspiracy to to like obstruct an official act of Congress, and to lie to Congress, and to defraud the United States, and to suppress people's rights to vote. Very specifically, the indictment does not say that he was responsible for inciting the January 6th riot with his speech acts, because that was like one of the most controversial parts of it going into it. Like, I remember talking a lot when we were in Constitution team about, like, you know, can Trump actually get charged with incitement here because he's making a lot of vague statements? And it seems like, you know, the answer might have been yes. But Jack Smith, the prosecutor, decided not to go that route, and decided to basically just say, like, his, you know, through a conspiracy to basically create fake electors that weren't legitimate electors of states and have them, like, transmit, like, certify that they were legitimate electors and then transmit those to Congress, that essentially amounted to a criminal conspiracy to lie to the United States. And yeah, I I'm super excited to see how this one plays out. We obviously don't really know, like, what is going to happen. There's, you know, it's certainly not an open and shut case. Like, I think the classified documents one is. Like, I'm pretty sure we talked about that one before. I think that one's probably the strongest case against him. But the January 6th one is probably the one that I'm most interested in.
I think what's interesting about this, I can't find the exact article, but I saw somewhere that he's, like, really trying to push these charges off, or, like, the proceedings, at least, of them until 2026, which makes me think he thinks he's going to get reelected and he's going to try to, like, pardon himself or something weird, or pardon the people that are involved with him. Because I know that with some of these charges, there was, like, a plethora of, like, other individuals, even people, like, who you would just not expect. Like, I think somebody who was a former, like, music producer or manager was also somehow linked to all of this. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that if he was somehow to be reelected, that he, like, that's kind of his plan is, yeah, I could just try to pardon myself, basically, by pushing this off till 2026?
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it. Like, and he knows that it's probably not going to be good for him to be facing charges while running for office, both, like, because of the public image and because it'll take a lot of his resources away. Like, the money he could be spending on campaigns, he's now having to spend on legal fees. So that's bad for him. So he obviously wants it delayed as much as he can. And I think, yeah, he probably, if he does win, he probably will try to pardon himself, at least for the federal cases. You can't pardon yourself from the New York or Georgia cases. It's whether or not he actually can is totally untested legal ground. We have no idea. Like, we just don't know. Because the Constitution says the president can pardon people for federal offenses. It doesn't say whether or not the president can pardon himself, because no one's ever tried to do it. Because no president has ever, like, been in a position where they would. I think the closest was Nixon, and Nixon ended up getting pardoned by Ford. So it's never really come up before. And we don't really know how courts would interpret the Constitution in that case. So, yeah, I do think, like, if another Republican gets in office, they probably would pardon him, unless it's, like, Chris Christie. But if, like, if DeSantis wins, or, I don't know, DeSantis is the only real other serious competitor at this point, I think. But if he wins, he's probably, yeah, he would probably pardon Trump, unless it got, like, really vicious.
They have a lot of issues with each other lately, but I can still, I agree, see DeSantis pardoning him. Even with, like, the issues that they've had, like, over social media and such. Something I think is really interesting, too, about, like, this specific indictment is, I know that there was a person at Vox who was talking about how, like, this case will legally define what a politician is able to do to, reverse a defeat, which I think is really interesting, and could probably have some major, like, implications in the 2024 election. Which, I mean, if we have a election like we did in 2020, that could be pretty bad. If this is, like, a cycle that's, like, allowed to continue of, like, literally blatantly lying and claiming that you have facts to back it up, when in reality you don't, and convincing all these people who do back you very strongly to believe that, yeah, an election has been stolen, because that's a very serious accusation. And I think one more thing I find really interesting too is the potential jail time that he could get per count, but it's pretty obvious he probably won't get even near this if he was to even be found guilty. Conspiracy to defraud the United States is a maximum of 5 years. Conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding is 20 years. Obstructing an official proceeding is 20 years. And conspiracy against the right to vote is 10 years. Those are all the max sentences, again. So just really interesting.
Yeah. It's whether or not he actually goes to jail, I think, is largely going to be up to the judges. I think the judge in the January 6th case, if I remember correctly, has actually tried, like, people that rioted at the Capitol, and was not very favorable to them. So, there's a good chance he would go to jail if he does get found guilty.
100%. I think it's also kind of ironic in a way that this is all happening, because, like you were talking about, if this is the same judge, like, it's kind of holding the party of law and order, quote unquote, like, to that standard, because I think a lot of those individuals who did participate in January 6th genuinely did not think they were doing something bad. And it's kind of just calling out the hypocrisy of, again, like, we're the party of law and order, but they were all upset when they got caught breaking the law and, you know, doing some pretty serious things, and putting Congress and former Vice President Mike Pence in extreme danger. So it's just really interesting.
Yeah. There's also an interesting thing with Mike Pence that you mentioned. One of the things in the indictment that the prosecutors used to go to show that Trump knew that he had lost was he called Mike Pence too honest. And now Pence is selling t-shirts that say, you know, too honest on them. So yeah, it's fun.
That's really funny. Do you think that there's anything important to point out, like extra information, like with the Georgia indictment that happened?
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff there. So one thing is, like, the list of unindicted co-conspirators is, like, huge. It's like 20 people, I think, in Georgia. Whereas in the federal case, it's like 5 others. It's like Giuliani, Eastman, Powell, Cheesebro, Jeffrey Clark, and like some other guy who we don't know. I think it's Boris Epstein, I think is what people are thinking it is. They're not actually named, but yeah. But the Georgia one names people, and it names like all those people and like several more. So that's interesting. Those people are as of yet unindicted, but they like are alleged to have taken part in the conspiracy. And the other thing is that the Georgia case uses a law called RICO, which there's a, you know, famous legal joke that it's never RICO. That act is, it doesn't apply to a lot of things, but it's basically, it's anti-racketeering, which I forget exactly how it's defined, but it's basically, it was used to go after the mob and like other criminal organizations. And one of the people that pioneered its use was Rudy Giuliani, who is obviously one of the unindicted co-conspirators. So
the irony is that's, so good there. Thing,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And again, like, I won't list them off because there's a lot here. But again, just like all these potential jail time sentences, like per count, are also a lot. Again, it's very unlikely he'll probably get these imposed, or like at least to the maximum. But it's just crazy, like how many charges or like, you know, counts he's really racking up here. And he's still denying all of this. So that's why it's just extra funny.
The other thing is interesting, in Georgia, they promised that they were going to give him a mugshot and like a full booking and everything, whereas he avoided that in New York and federal court and do that to him.
I just have one question, though. Will they let him do a press conference from jail? Because I know he's really big on his press conferences, you know, like maybe. I know he was already, I guess his lawyers were trying to get him to not do one this week because he wanted to or something, like, and they were like, don't do that. And he's like, no, I'm going to do it. Or some sort of like rally. Yeah, it says, this is from ABC News. It says, Trump's legal advisors urge him to cancel press conference to refute Georgia allegations.
yeah, no. Yeah, if I was Trump's lawyer, I would be advising him not to talk at all.
Right? Like, no, stop talking. Don't say anything else.
Yeah, I did everything right and they indicted me.
Oh my gosh, that's too good. But yeah, I guess we'll definitely keep everybody like updated on this. I feel like this is something we're definitely going to be following for the next few months. But yeah, Story, do you have any like anything else you want to add about this? I feel like this is just such a like deep like web of just things we could like say about this whole thing.
Yeah. I don't know. It remains to be seen, like, if we'll actually see any of these trials before the election. I sure hope that we do. Like, even after we do, there's probably going to be a ton of appeals. So he's probably not going to go to jail before the election. At least, like, yeah. But I do hope we get to see at least one of these happen before the election. Yeah. Oh, another thing, like, Trump-related, but not directly related to the indictments. He said he was going to skip the first Republican primary debate and instead do an interview with Tucker Carlson. but yeah. I think he's right now he's like pretty far and away the front runner in the primary. I think like as time goes on, he's probably gonna lose a lot of that lead. But especially like after skipping the debate, like yeah, I think he thinks
I'm surprised,
it can't hurt
honestly.
Him, but I think
he can. I was actually just gonna bring that up too. Like there's that first debate happening on Wednesday evening. And I'm kind of surprised, to be honest, that he won't be there. Because I remember during the 20... I mean, I know he was obviously, like, the nominated person. Or party nominee. Because he had been in office. But he didn't want to skip it when he had COVID. So I'm kind of surprised he wants, you know, to skip it during this time when he could, you know, talk more for all of us. But, yeah, it'll be also, like, just... Sorry, just going to really quickly just say this. I think it'll be interesting as well... I'm for sure going to watch the debate on Wednesday. I'm just kind of curious what they're all like, what all of the nominees are going to say. Because I think that, honestly, like you were kind of saying earlier, I think really only DeSantis or Trump has a chance. I think, you know, we have some other like runners. Like I know Mike Pence, I think, at least filed paperwork to run. Nikki Haley, a couple other like not as well known Republicans. Chris Christie, right, as well. But I really think like, really popular people right now, at least that I've seen just from like social media and like news articles, is Trump and DeSantis. And honestly, I think a lot of people, like I know we talked about this I think last episode, a lot of people were really upset when Trump and DeSantis had their issues and they actually were taking DeSantis's side. Like there was one guy, I remember talking about this last episode, and there was a skit, or not a skit, but like a video on TikTok of this guy interviewing people who support, you know, DeSantis and Trump. And he was saying, what made you stop voting for Trump or stop wanting to vote for Trump? And the guy said, when he went after DeSantis, he's like, it wasn't January 6th. It wasn't the indictment. I'm like, I don't know. I just think that these people are just, they do not care. They are ruthless. They are very, very, very strong in their belief of like Trump and DeSantis are like, you know, amazing and like cannot do anything wrong. But I guess Trump can do something wrong if he does not defend DeSantis. So, found a flaw, finally.
I did not realize the debates were on Wednesday. I thought they were, like, further into the future.
But I know, right?
No, they're super close. But yeah, look it up. So it looks like the people that are going to be there are DeSantis, Pence, Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, Chris Christie, Doug Burgum, who's the governor of North Dakota, and Asa Hutchinson, who was the former governor of Arkansas. Chris Christie is like, he's positioned himself as like the anti-Trump candidate. And I think Asa Hutchinson kind of has also. But yeah, Vivek Ramaswamy is like, he's not really a politician. He's just like an entrepreneur tech guy, kind of like Trump in 2016 that just like decided to run. But I think he actually like paid people to donate to his campaign so that he could reach the fundraising goal. It was weird. It was like, I will give you $5 if you donate $1 to my campaign so that we can say we have you as a donor.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
Perfect. Should we move on to our next topic or any last thoughts?
Sure.
Perfect. Do you want to kick us off again?
Yeah, we're talking about Niger. Yeah, so at the end of July, there was a coup in the West African country, Niger. It's right above Nigeria, if you need a geography check. But yeah, it is very distinctly not Nigeria. Although it's kind of weird, like, if you read articles on it, Nigeria is very heavily involved in the situation. And you'll hear, like, you'll read it spelled like Nigerians and Nigerians, and it's like the difference is an E, but it looks like you pronounce them the same way, but it's different. So yeah, there was a coup there, and there's basically now been several, like, you have 1 week to end the coup, or we'll invade from ECOWAS, which is, like, the regional organization. And that, you know, those deadlines have passed and passed, and there's been no invasion yet, but I think there probably is going to be one within the next couple of weeks. But yeah, so let's, like, take a step back. So ECOWAS is... a regional organization. It's, you know, includes like Nigeria, Ghana, Senegal, Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso, a bunch of countries in that area. it started out as the Economic Community of West African States. It was mainly meant to, you know, do development stuff, funding like that. But eventually, in like the 90s, there was a civil war in Liberia, and it intervened. It like created military force from like the militaries of its members and intervened in the Liberian civil war. And it's been like, it has a pretty successful track record of doing things like that, because it's done a bunch of them since then. Most recently, I think in 2017, like, they intervened in the Gambia and like were essentially successfully able to reverse a coup there. So like, they basically threatened at the start of the coup, and I wrote an article on Substack about this. They basically said, all right, Niger, you have 1 week until, and then we'll invade if, you know, to restore the legitimate government. And the coup government was like, no, we're not going to do that. And then the week deadline passed and there was no invasion. And so basically the reason why is because it would be very difficult to actually do that, because Mali and Burkina Faso both have governments that were led by people that were installed by coups. And so they're kind of seeing, like, you know, Niger is like a fellow, you know, coup government, and they're like, we'll support you. So they literally said, like, if there's any invasion in Niger, we will support the government in Niger, the coup government. And those countries both are getting security assistance from the Wagner Group, which is a Russian private military company, which has also been approaching Niger, basically saying, like, hey, if you need, you know, security assistance, you know, we'll help you. And it's basically like served the function of essentially filling the security vacuum that's left by Western forces leaving. Because in Mali and Burkina Faso, those coups were very much motivated by anti-French sentiment, because the French colonized both of them, and then, you know, French militaries were kicked out. But the French military was also helping to essentially fight insurgent groups in the area. So the Wagner Group basically says, hey, like, we'll come help you guys do what the French did. And we'll commit a ton of human rights violations along the way. So yeah, it's not good at all. But essentially, these two countries are saying, we will back Niger if ECOWAS invades. And ECOWAS is, right now it's chaired by the president of Nigeria, Muhammadu Buhari, who was unable to get the Senate to, the Nigerian Senate, to approve Nigerian forces joining the ECOWAS force. So he now has to go to other places to try and get forces, like Senegal. I know Senegal was supporting it. I'm not sure. I think there were a couple other countries. I don't think Ghana was, but I think they might have. But yeah, none of those countries really have like great militaries. The Nigerian military is really strong. It's one of the most powerful in Africa. But if they're not going to join the force, it's going to be very rough to do it. So Buhari is now thinking, like, okay, so I have to find, you know, convince these other countries to give me troops to send to this place where I'm facing like intervention from a Russian private military company to other countries to help this place. So even if like ECOWAS is able to eventually like get rid of the coup government and reinstall the legitimate government, it's going to take a long time. They're going to lose a lot of people. A lot of civilians will probably die. And Buhari really wants like a domestic win in Nigeria, right? So if he, part of the reason why he wanted to intervene was so that he could show the people of Nigeria that he was strong. But if he fails, then he looks really bad. So it's not a great situation. And also, there's lots of potential for escalation, because the US and France both have large amounts of troops stationed in Niger. So if they get involved, like, that could escalate. Like, France has actually like been pretty aggressive. The US has basically like said, like, oh, we support ECOWAS, you know, we think the coup government should, they haven't called it a coup, because if they called it a coup, the US would be obligated by law to withdraw to all its forces. But they've basically like been against it publicly, but they don't want to intervene because they don't want to get dragged into another war. There's also lots of instability in Chad, which is right next door. So there's lots of potential ways that this could escalate. And I think like that's why it hasn't so far. But ECOWAS did recently order the deployment of a standby force, which basically means they're sending troops there, but they're not telling them to do anything yet. And they actually recently said, we are going to, like, actually order the standby force to start doing stuff. And we've picked a day, like, they call it a D-Day, that they're going to do it. So if that is the case, I think, like, we probably will eventually see some kind of war breakout. And, you know, my Substack article is called, like, you know, is World War III about to start? And it's probably not going to be World War III, but it's probably going to be, like, kind of close because there are a lot of major forces like Russia, France, the US that are involved there, that could get involved. So yeah, it's looking like there's probably going to be a massive conflict unless ECOWAS is telling something different to Niger than they're saying publicly. I think we are going to see a war break out, and it's not going to be good for anybody.
I honestly have not, like, followed this as closely as you have, but that was very interesting, like, to hear, like, some of the background, so thank you. But I think it is very scary, like you're saying, that, like the violence could, you know, escalate. Because I was reading earlier about how that alliance you were talking about, or that group, I forget the acronym for it.
ECOWAS?
Yeah, that's kind of mostly West African countries, right?
It's literally, it's okay. West African states is the WAS.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. But that's interesting, though, that, like, they kind of were, like, giving them a deadline and that it's kind of just, again, continue to escalate. That's kind of all I have. I feel like you summarized it very well. If there's anything you want to add on.
Yeah. My initial thought was that there probably wasn't going to be war, because I thought that people would, like, realize how bad of an idea it would be. But now that, like, they've actually ordered the deployment of a standby force and they've actively said, like, we have a day picked, like, where we're going to actually start, you know, fighting. It seems like it would be very dumb of them to lie. Like, because, you know, part of, like, what ECOWAS relies on is its credibility. Like, either 2017 or 2019, they basically, like, there was a coup in some small country and they basically said, like, we're going to intervene. And they basically, just by threatening to intervene, they caused the situation to be mostly resolved. So it's, if they said, like, we are deploying a standby force and we're going to intervene, it would be pretty foolish of them to not go through on that. Although the outcome of the war is, I don't think it's going to be good. It's possible that, like, they change their mind and they end up, like, you know, they end up convincing, like, Niger, the coup government, to, like, give up something small. Like, maybe they let, you know, the previous president, Mohamed Bazoum, like, maybe they let him leave the country or something. And, you know, they agree to, like, you know, not do anything drastic. But I don't know. It's not going to be a good end to this story, like, no matter what. Yeah. The other big part of the story is, like, the fact that the U.S. and France have, like, military presences there. They've relied on Niger as basically a base for a long time. And they've actually trained a lot of the Nigerian military, including the people that were involved in the coup. There's a segment of a column called It's Debatable in Foreign Policy that I read all the time. And they had a debate about whether or not... it was a good thing that the U.S. was training members of the Nigerian military. Because it almost certainly, like, the U.S. training almost certainly made them more effective. But it's interesting. And just, you know, worth always remembering that the U.S. has its fingerprints everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I have a question for you, actually. So yeah. This article from yesterday was talking about how the military ruler who, like, ousted the, like, most recent president, mm-hmm. apparently, like, has proposed a return to democracy within 3 years, and he was saying, like, this would, like, the principles of the transition would be decided in the next month or so, and then, like, the like, group that they would host, like, a national dialogue and everything too, and how they, like, this dialogue could define national priorities or whatnot. Do you think that this is actually something that they want to do, or do you think this is more like, how do we make people think we're actually like not up to no good, basically.
It's definitely the psycho one. It's always the psycho one.
That's the thing. I was like, that seems a little fishy.
We saw this happen in Mali like recently, where the government was like, oh, we're gonna like, you know, hold elections, there's gonna be like a new constitution, and it's gonna be, you know, democracy for everyone. And then like once it actually gets close to the deadline they set, they're like, yeah, no, we're not doing that anymore. We'll do it later in the future, maybe. But yeah, it's yeah, coup governments, juntas, they always say like, yeah, like we'll, you know, transition to democracy within the next few years, and then they never do.
It's kind of wild that like it's happened in so many countries too, and that it just like continues to happen, you know.
Yeah, so like the area from like the Red Sea to the Atlantic is called the coup belt because there's just so many coups there. you can literally draw like a red line like across it, and like there's like a band of countries that have just all had a coup since like 2020. There were two in 2022. There were two coups in Burkina Faso. it's crazy.
I feel mean for laughing, but that nickname of the coup belt is pretty funny.
Yeah. All right. Anything else to say on this topic before we move on to the last one?
I don't think so. I think this is just like the last one where we'll just have to keep y'all updated, and it'll be interesting to see, like you were saying, story, like how it ends up playing out.
Yeah, there's a good chance that it'll be one of those conflicts that is just like forgotten by the Western media, and ends up just like being this massive war that is just playing out in the background behind everything, while, you know, the, you know, whatever's happening in Ukraine is on the front line of every newspaper every day. But Niger is like, oh, like every now and then there's like a update about it. Yeah, seems like that happens a lot.
Should we move into our last topic then? Anything else to add? All right.
You
want to
go and introduce it?
Yeah, sure. So we're just going to go over what's happening in Maui. I just think it's really important to just talk about it and make sure people know what's happening, and just, I think I've listened to a lot of Native Hawaiians talk about what's happening in Maui, and I don't want to like talk on their behalf necessarily, but I want to more kind of echo some of the things that they've been saying, because I think they're really important. But yeah, so if you didn't know, there is a massive wildfire in Hawaii, in Maui, and it's killed over 100 people so far, and there's still, I believe, over 850 missing people. And a big part of the fire that is really scary is the conditions on Maui were so dry, which is, they're not exactly sure, it sounds like, how it started. They're still trying to investigate it, but it just sounds like they've had like a really long period of like a red flag warning for fire risk. And there's really like dangerous high winds. And also these were caused by Hurricane Dora. But yeah, I think like a couple of things I want to highlight are, first of all, Native Hawaiians have been for a long time saying that they would like people to stop coming to Hawaii at the rate that they are, because of the disrespect people have for their islands. A lot of people, when they come, they participate in things that are illegal, such as, I was telling a story of this before we started recording, there's this hike. I don't want to say the name of it because I'm worried that people are going to get ideas. So I'm just going to basically explain what it is. Basically, there's a really pretty view, but it's not very safe, the trail itself. So they closed this hike down. Like, it's prohibited for people to go on it. But tourists come, they break the rules, and then they want to use Hawaiian resources, like, you know, a helicopter to rescue them or whatnot. And so that's just one example. A lot of times also people will go to maybe more like local areas and just like leave trash, maybe again like swim in places they're not supposed to swim and again need rescuing. And also just, I think that there's also just a lot of lack of respect as well for the fact that like Hawaii was also acquired to the US through like very negative and unfair means. And I don't know, I think that a lot of people who go to Hawaii again, like, they just have no regard for that or the people that live there already. And it's really sad because when the fires broke out, most of the people who are missing or who passed away are Native Hawaiians. Because all the tourists who were in Maui, even though they were told there's a danger of this, you should not come here, took all the resources and were the ones who got to fly out first. And there was even a video that was kind of all over social media of a bunch of Native Hawaiian people literally hiding in the oceans from the wildfires because they had nowhere else to go and all of the tourists got to leave first. And this is, like, still going on. So obviously, like, we might have some more updates for y'all in the next few episodes, but I think it's, again, just important to highlight, like, we should be listening more to Indigenous voices. And I think that also just, like, having more regard for our own actions and just, like, more common sense. I think it's just ridiculous that people are still traveling with just, you know, zero knowledge about what's going on. And, you know, I know, I think, like, there was one or two famous people as well who were, like, posting pictures while they were in Maui with everything going on. And it's kind of like these people are so removed from reality. They don't understand that on the other side of this island, you know, there's all these people who are missing, who lost their homes, lost everything. So yeah, I just think it's, again, important to highlight and just really sad that this is all happening. And I really hope that something is able to be done and that these people are able to get the help that they need to rebuild what they've lost.
Yeah. I haven't been able to read a ton about it, but from what I have read, it seems like the local government basically knew there was a huge risk of fire and then did, like, nothing about it, and then failed to sound the alarms in time, and now, like, a lot of people are dead and even more missing because of it. Yeah, and it's just, yeah, it's, I think situations like this are going to start becoming more common, unfortunately, because of climate change, which, like, I don't know. It's a lot of the conversation about climate change has basically moved away from, like, can we actually solve this problem, and more towards, like, how do we deal with the consequences? Which I think is just is a sad state of things, because I think there is actually a lot we can do about climate change. Although, like, we really do have to start preparing for its consequences at this point, because there's some stuff that, you know, at least isn't going to be reversed anytime soon. But, you know, it is important to remember that we can do something about it. We can prevent it from getting worse.
100%. I think that there's a lot we can do. And I think, like, just, like, echo it one more time. Like, we should definitely listen to Indigenous peoples, because I think that they really understand how we can respect their homes better. And I think that, like, we've already contributed to so much of the bad that's happened to Indigenous people. And I think that, like, in every case, they've always been, like, really trying to help the rest of us who aren't native to this land, like, understand how we can, you know, better treat the environment, and we just refuse to listen. And, like, the government just continues to ignore, like, their requests, and it's just really blown up here, I think. And I really hope that for a lot of people this serves as, like, a wake-up call of we really need to listen to them and, again, like, have more respect for what they're saying to us.
Yeah. I don't know if this was as, I don't know how much this was the case in Maui, but I know in a lot of places, there's a podcast called California Burning, which talks about this. It's mostly in California, obviously. But, like, Native Americans, like, for centuries, were able to, like, you know, take care of the land, and there weren't fires because, like, they took care of it properly. And then, like, you know, the Westerners came in and were like, you know, we know actually how to do fire prevention best. And they didn't. And now, like, fires are way more common for, like, because, like, like, the Western fire practices don't work as well as the Native American ones do. And yeah. Like, the big thing is, like, controlled burns. Controlled burns are one of the best things you can do to prevent fires, because they get rid of, like, all the excess, like, twigs and stuff that burn really easily. And if you get rid of those, like, the fire, the big fires that start randomly that could become wildfires don't really have anywhere to go. But because basically the Westerners were, like, they viewed, like, trees as, like, an economic resource. So they were like, you know, anything that is, like, fire needs to be absolutely totally destroyed, which means all controlled burns are now forbidden. And then you know, a ton of wildfires started happening. I wonder why.
I think, like, one last thing I want to say is, obviously social media can be really negative in a lot of these times, but I think also, like, you can learn a lot from, you know, creators and people who, like, have strong connections to Maui. Like, one Instagram account I follow that I think is really good. I don't want to butcher the name, but it's Protect Mauna Kea, I think is how you say it. And I think they have a lot of really good information and also, like, links to other accounts and people who are from Maui who can definitely let everybody know how they can help and just to learn more about what's happening and, you know, how the government, like you were talking about, like, isn't as great as everybody might think that it is in Maui and, like, how they kind of knew what was going on. Yeah, I just think really educational, and definitely anybody listening who's interested in learning more should check all those Instagram accounts out that they have.
And be aware of the dark side of social media also. I've seen a lot of conspiracy theories going around about Maui.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The space laser people are like, yeah, it was the government, you know, launching space lasers to, I don't even know why. They just, like, I don't know. But yeah, there's lots of conspiracy theories about this.
There really is. Yeah. I agree. But yeah, unless you have anything to add, Story, I think that's everything. Just wanted to give a quick overview.
No, that's it.
Awesome. Well, thank you all very much for tuning in. Story, I had a great time chatting with you as always. And I would just say again, stay tuned and make sure to go check out Story's Substack articles because they're really awesome and very informational. But yeah, sunset out.